Okay, we are. Excellent. Cool. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome. This session is Building Business Applications with SharePoint 2013 and K2. We'll introduce ourselves quickly here for you guys. So my name is Brian Farnhill. I'm an independent SharePoint consultant based out of Canberra, the nation's capital. Good to get up here to some warm weather for a change. I'm a SharePoint Server MVP, and I'm also a part-time lecturer for Charles Sturt University.
Yes, thank you, Brian. My name is Henny. Thank you to all of you for joining us this afternoon. I know it's almost time to go to the party, so we'll try and make us a good spend of your time. I'm with K2. I've been on the K2 team since 2001 timeframe. So I was on the team that took SharePoint integration with K2 to market for SharePoint 2001, 2003, 2007, 2010, and now 2013. So for that reason, I think we've seen the movie on SharePoint integration before, and I'm excited to tell you today about what's possible of 2013 and why. Against the backdrop of what Brian's going to explain, so before I say too much, Brian, let's get going. It's getting late.
Let's get into it. So what we're going to cover off for you guys today is we're going to start off by giving you a bit of a business case for why you're going to want to look at building apps. Right? Why do we want to move from the server-side solutions we have been building with SharePoint to apps? What's the benefit for us? I'm going to go into a bit around the hosting options for apps and include a bit of a demo and show you the differences, how they work. Then I'm going to hand over to Henny. He's going to talk about what K2 is specifically doing with SharePoint and some of the technologies in SharePoint 2013 that have enabled them to deliver apps on the new platform. He's going to be talking about OAuth, the client-side object models, REST, and remote event receivers and how they've all played key roles in delivering these new apps. So we begin with the business case. So what exactly are apps? For those of you who haven't heard about the big new thing for developers here in SharePoint, we're now focusing on creating a new way to extend SharePoint sites that doesn't depend on us deploying assets to the server. Right, we're focusing on remote and client-side options and things that don't require us to install and configure things on the servers themselves, making our solutions much more portable and more isolatable, so they're less likely to have a negative impact on SharePoint. They're designed deliberately to be independent to the platform. All right, they are loosely bound by their nature, so we don't bind to a specific version of SharePoint anymore. We look at binding to specific endpoints and APIs. And we're aiming to simplify the process for installing these applications for users as well. You know, once we start looking at the public app store, the process is similar to installing an app on your phone, where you search, select the app, next, finish, and you're done. So what makes this so important for us as developers? The new app model has been built from the ground up to work in the cloud. So this means Office 365 in particular. I can create an app that is fully featured, does all sorts of fantastic things for SharePoint, deploy it to both on-premise and into the cloud with the same code base. If you had looked at doing sandbox solutions for SharePoint 2010, chances are you would have found that a pretty limiting experience for what you can do from a developer's standpoint. This isn't the case with 2013 anymore. The client object models have been expanded dramatically. We can now cover things like search, user profiles, workflow, all sorts of extended areas into the API and get to them through new REST endpoints as well as the traditional JavaScript managed.net object models. But further than that, you don't even need to know .NET anymore to write apps for SharePoint. The focus is on delivering HTML and JavaScript-based applications. And to spit out HTML, I could be using any kind of platform I want. I could be writing PHP, I could write ColdFusion if I really decided I felt bad that day. But they are all equally valid for creating apps for SharePoint and will integrate just as tightly as anything delivered in .NET running on iOS. So this makes it easier to get up to speed for people who haven't traditionally been SharePoint developers. You can get new people into the ecosystem creating apps without needing to have that steep learning curve that's traditionally held people back from getting into SharePoint development. We have improved delivery channels in SharePoint 2013. This is a big win for us. We now have a public-facing app store that anyone can go and deploy apps into. I could be an individual developer on my own who has a good idea. I could take it, publish it into the store, and it's there alongside any of the big players as well. So we can push them out to whole new markets and reach areas that we weren't able to easily reach before, particularly as, you know, individual developers. I could start selling my app for 99 cents and retire to an island somewhere. I'm really looking forward to that one. Apps are also built for more devices. So the new object models, like I said, there's REST options for all of them. And REST, by its very nature, is just HTTP and can be called from anywhere. There's already REST libraries that are used across multiple devices for all sorts of things. Facebook and Twitter applications in particular make heavy use of this sort of thing. So I could grab the iOS libraries to help me manage my REST calls and they would still be able to communicate into SharePoint. And being HTML and JavaScript based, you know, they can run in a browser. Any device with a browser is going to be able to get to my applications and they're going to integrate nicely there as well. The other thing that we need to look at here is the upgrade story. Traditionally, if you've been doing upgrades from, say, SharePoint 2007 to 2010, one of the biggest headaches that you'll come across is around what happens when you need to test your customizations, the things that you've gone and coded yourself and deployed into SharePoint. Microsoft can't account for what you've done there, so you need to do all the work in the upgrade scenario there yourself. Now, this is a problem with tightly bound solutions that have been deployed to the server in that they are tend to be very dependent on what's going on SharePoint. So if you upgrade the version of SharePoint, there's a high risk that you're going to need to reevaluate your solution and possibly change it to line up with the new version. Hopefully this isn't the case with the new app model. Given that we're only loosely bound on an API being there, we can continue to not care what version of SharePoint is actually deployed as long as that API that my app is using still exists in the new versions. And there can be versioning of those APIs as well, hopefully going forward. We'll yet to see that, but it makes a better model that reduces the risk of doing customizations. And I know talking to customers right now, some people are holding off on moving to SharePoint 2013 because they just finished dropping ridiculously large bags of cash to go to 2010 because of the upgrading experience of their components. Once we start moving across to the app model, the aim is that we're going to be reducing this and make it easier and more portable for our solutions. Easier to manage. So the new app model has a whole lot of configuration options that have been built into it as well that make it easier for IT pros to control. One of the most common responses I get when I tell people, hey, there's a public app store, is how do I stop my users from going and downloading, you know, the Daily Dilbert app a million times and putting it all over my SharePoint sites? IT pros can have complete control over who has permissions to install apps and whether or not you can connect to the public app store at all. You have the option of creating an internal app catalog. And this allows you to store apps just for your enterprise without going to the public store. And you can bring apps down into there that you want your users to be able to take advantage of. We can also do monitoring on apps to make sure that they're not doing anything, you know, too negative as far as the querying that they're doing and that sort of thing. And we still get a complete permissions model relating to both the users and the apps. So the experience is quite controllable from an IT pro perspective. So how do I host my SharePoint apps? This is probably, again, one of the big questions I get asked when I say, you can run your apps somewhere else that's not on SharePoint. Well, as SharePoint developers, we've not had to worry about that previously. Right? I just installed it to SharePoint. I didn't need to think about where it was going to run. We get three different hosting options for when we're developing apps in SharePoint. The first one is the SharePoint hosted option, which is exactly what it sounds like. It is SharePoint hosting your files. Now, there are a few limitations here. The big one is that you cannot have any managed code in this solution. It has to be entirely HTML and JavaScript based. So what this means is we take advantage of the new REST APIs and we work from the client side in the browser and make all of our calls to SharePoint from there. This gives us a really easy way to start spinning up applications quickly though, because we don't need to worry about provisioning out any kind of hosting and how we're going to deploy our applications. The second option is auto-hosted. This gives us the ability in Windows Azure, in Office 365 to create Windows Azure websites and SQL databases when users install our apps. And the third one is provider hosted. This is basically the BYO model where you set up your own hosting on your own server anywhere that SharePoint can connect to, and you can run your app from there. And like I said, that doesn't even need to be a .NET based server. So looking at the hosting options for apps here in a little bit of a visual way, inside of SharePoint, when you install an app, you can optionally create what's called an app web. All right, so this is essentially where the SharePoint components of your app will live, and SharePoint will deliver them to users from there. Now, the options on the side are the cloud-hosted options. My provider-hosted one provides me with the most flexibility, which is important, but along with that, it provides me with the most responsibility to make sure I get it right, because everything is on me as the developer to nail that. The auto-hosted option, though, very, very simple to get set up and running with. Means I don't need to worry about the hosting, but I still have all the power of something that's running remotely. So the app web component, for all intents and purposes, is just a subsite within your site collection. It can be referred to as a regular SP web object. And when you deploy your app, anything that you could do as a web scoped feature can deploy quite happily into there. So that means I can create lists, list templates, and deploy those out. I can use modules to push files in, all those sorts of things. SharePoint will actually force users to view app webs through a special URL that gets generated when the app is installed. This is done for security and isolation purposes. It's part of the configuration when you're going through setting up the apps, and your IT pros will get involved with that. But this basically ensures that the apps can be monitored for permissions to make sure they don't do anything they shouldn't be, and are also very, very isolated from a client-side storage perspective with things like cookies. So if we start looking quickly at the pros and cons of some of these, the SharePoint hosted apps, as I mentioned, very, very quick to get up and running, and I don't need to think about hosting. Right? It's just HTML and JavaScript. It lives in SharePoint. I don't need another web server. All right, all the JavaScript calls from the app web, you also don't need to do additional authentication on. Because if SharePoint is hosting it up within that app web and within that SP site, the user is already authenticated to get there. So you don't need to worry about any of the remote authentication options. Now, the catch there is that, obviously, you get no server-side code. So you need to enjoy writing JavaScript, and I'm begrudgingly starting to go down that path, but I'm going kicking and screaming. And you're limited to the scope of what can go into that single web object. So if you need to depend on deploying things to the site collection, you can't get away with doing that in an app. It's got to be isolated to that web. If I look at the auto-hosted option, there are some great wins in this scenario in that I automatically get multi-tenancy of my app for the fact that each installation translates out to an install of that the website and SQL database within Windows Azure. So this means, again, I don't need to think about the multi-tenancy. I just say, there's my services and my website that's going to be surfaced back up inside of SharePoint, and then let it go. And then at the end of the day, the tenant owner is responsible for maintaining the billing of that within Windows Azure. So me as the developer, I don't need to worry about that. But again, there are a couple of drawbacks to this option. First of all, it's only available in SharePoint Online. So if I'm creating auto-hosted apps, I can't deploy them to on-premise. The second drawback is that they're actually not accepting these types of apps for submission into the public app store yet. There's a very long validation list for things that you need to do to get into the app store at the moment, and right now they're not accepting this particular type of app. Obviously, they will at some point in the future, but right now, you can't submit these. The third type is the provider-hosted. So what this does is I get complete freedom over every element of how my app is hosted. So I have the most ability to do anything that I want to do. This is also great because it's the easiest of the app models for me to make changes to and update as a developer. Say I roll out version 1.0 of my app and it goes in through the process of getting approved and people start installing it and I need to make changes. I'm the one who's in control of the provider-hosted component here, so I can change that as often as I need to. Now the downside here is that I need to take full responsibility for multi-tenancy within my application. So I need to think about how I handle the calls that come in, how I identify which sites they came from. SharePoint will provide you details in the query string of the first call, so you can identify the site and the user and elements like that. You're also completely responsible for all your own configuration, maintenance, health monitoring, availability, all the things that you need to think about when you're doing a traditional ASP.NET website. Selecting the right type of hosting is going to be key to the success or failure of your app. So the first thing you need to do with that is have a really good understanding of exactly what it is your app is going to do. And don't just think through the functionality that you need to deliver on day one. Think about how you're going to be managing the update process and what that's going to be like going forward. You need to also factor in how your hosting is going to have an impact in that and understand the pros and cons of each one before you make a decision and actually start cutting code. The other thing to think about here is that app updates aren't actually forced onto users. It's a similar concept to when you see that you've got updates available for apps on your phone. You'll see the little icon next to the app store saying that, hey, there's two or three different apps that you need to update. It's entirely up to you as the user as to when you do that. Now, the catch here is if you start looking at the provider-hosted option, this might mean you need to version your own APIs that are being called from SharePoint because the users from the SharePoint end may or may not have updated from version 1 to version 2 of your app. So there's additional considerations there. You also need to think about things like if I'm using search extensively and storing a lot of data within my apps, do I need to make sure that SharePoint can be aware of that data if it's outside of SharePoint? Also things like reuse of components. If I'm creating these isolated apps, am I developing them in such a way that the code that I'm writing can be shared amongst other apps that I'm doing? And rethinking our approaches there because we're not deploying to the GAC on the server where everything can share everything else that's there. And also things like the fact that you can't use Kerberos authentication inside of an app. which means if you're relying on the app passing credentials through to an external source, you need to look at alternative authentication methods. So what I'm going to do now quickly is just show you guys a couple of basic examples of apps and some of the things we can do with them. Let me just jump in over here. And that one. So what I've created here is just use the basic tooling inside of Visual Studio 2012, which is available through the web platform installer when you download the SDK, and created myself two SharePoint apps that both do the same thing. I have got a fake list of contacts, and I just want to display them in some nice, prettied up way on the screen. I've done this with two different types of apps, though. The first I've done it is a SharePoint hosted option, and the second I've done is a provider hosted option, just to show you the difference in how the code runs and how things are done. So let me just refresh here, and thanks to the screen resolution on this, my screen is looking a little bit out. But basically, you can see I've got a bunch of little contact cards there with names that are coming from a SharePoint list. All right, so this is actually an app. And if you have a look in the URL there at the top of the screen, you see it's actually got a unique identifier of, it's not a full GUID, but this happens every time you install an app, it gives you your app a unique URL. Right, so this keeps it isolated. Now, everything you're seeing on the screen here is actually done through JavaScript calls to the REST endpoints. So what that actually looks like in code is a little bit like this. So what I'm doing here is I'm using a jQuery AJAX call to make a request through to the SharePoint's underscore API directory, which is that URL you see that I'm building up there. So here I'm referring to a specific list named contacts, saying I want the items out of that list. Now, to simplify my JavaScript even further, I've taken advantage of a framework called Knockout, which is a MVVM framework for JavaScript, and a mapping extension for that, which, again, further simplifies the process of creating objects to pump into my mappings. So you can see here this code is actually quite simple to say, take my mapping from my JavaScript result set, my JSON data, and pass that into an array for my view model. The HTML, again, quite simple. So just defining my for each element in my bindings there. So this is all knockout specific syntax. So it will go through and loop and create the objects I need and spit them out to the page doing the binding, and it automatically wires everything up for me. So you can see using the JavaScript object model to these REST endpoints is actually not that difficult to do. You can spin things up quite quickly and start getting to some pretty cool functionality without a whole lot of effort going into it. So now let me close that and flick across and show you the provider hosted option. Now with the provider hosted option, you need to specify how it's going to authenticate. So there are two options for this. The first one is OAuth, which Henny's going to speak to a little bit later in the session. And the second one is a high trust model, where you exchange certificates between SharePoint and the app. And this is designed more for on-premise. Now what I've done in this example is I've taken advantage of that and created myself just an ASP.NET MVC. Website. So if I have to press F5 and deploy this just so that you can see it's doing the same thing. So what we can look at the bottom here is that Visual Studio is uninstalling and reinstalling my app. Now, when you install apps, if they request specific permissions, you'll actually get a little trust dialog like this that says, do you trust what this app is going to do? In this case, I'll say, yes, I do. And come across and browse into my app. So again, you see I'm getting a fairly similar page, and it looks and feels just like SharePoint does. This time around, though, have a look at the URL, and you can see it's running off localhost with an automatically generated port number and is completely outside of the scope of SharePoint. This could be on a remote server somewhere else on the other side of the internet for all we need to care. But the way this behaves in code is a little bit more complicated. So if I come into my MVC application and have a look here, I've created myself a small helper class. Basically what we're doing here, if you've ever used the manage.net APIs from SharePoint 2010 for the client-side stuff, the behavior here is exactly the same. I'm just doing it within an MVC website. It's been extended to use this token helper class, which automatically gets generated for you when you tell SharePoint that you want to do a provider, tell Visual Studio that you'd like to do a provider-hosted app. And I go and get me a client context based on this URL and this security certificate. Now, in this particular example, I'm actually caching it because all the variables I need to get this come to me in the query string. So if the user starts making postbacks throughout my application, I need to make sure that I've got the ability to get that client context back. In this example, I've just been lazy and dumped it straight into the current cache, but there are probably some better ways of managing that. But to go and get the data, this is what I'm doing. So again, this is just the manage.net API. I'm using my client context, calling out to get a list, putting together a basic camel query, specifying which columns I would like to load to ensure the traffic is minimized between SharePoint and my ASP.NET server, and then using my client context.execute query to bundle up everything that I've asked for, go and get it from SharePoint, and then populate it back out. And then from there, it's just a simple view model and binding that to the page, and all the information I need is then come back out for the user to be able to access. So as you can see, the JavaScript option in this particular scenario was dramatically less code and less complicated to set up. But I was also far more limited from what I could do. If I wanted to take this ASP.NET application, I could do anything at all that I wanted to do with it. And I've got those SharePoint APIs available to start querying back in and getting to that sort of data. The added benefit of the building apps is that I also don't need to be developing on the SharePoint server anymore. Right, I can develop remotely to SharePoint and deploy into a developer site collection. That could be on a SharePoint server somewhere in your enterprise, or that could even be in Office 365. We can deploy from Visual Studio directly to there, which means no more lugging around ridiculously heavy laptops like this one here to be able to run up your virtualized environments. Okay, so what I'm going to do at this point now is I'm going to hand over to Henny, who's going to talk about what K2 have done with SharePoint.
Thank you, Brian. Right, just by a quick raise of hands, who's familiar with K2? Well, quite a few of you. Who's built a SharePoint app before? Also quite a few. Good. Thanks, Brian, for all that context. All right, so with K2 and SharePoint, for those of you who don't know what we do, it's not a sales and marketing session, but a quick bit of background. We're all about making it quicker and easier to build and run business apps. That may be in and around SharePoint, or it may be without SharePoint, but that's what we do. Business app in our world could include electronic forms. It could include workflow logic. It could include integration to one or more systems. And it may include some embedded BI in, so that we can know who's doing what, where, and when. Now, around SharePoint, we've got a long history around for integrating around SharePoint. We're going to focus on what we're doing around 2013 today, which is actually a significant departure from how we used to do it. And I'm excited about it, and I'm keen to tell you all about it, which is what we're going to spend the next 15 minutes on. Now, around SharePoint, you can use K2 to build list and document library-centric kind of applications. You can also build applications that really integrates to line-of-business systems, but where the UI is surfaced into SharePoint. We'll show you a bit of both today. Now, for the last 10 years, we've really had what people would call in the new world a provider-hosted app. We just didn't give it that name, but we've always had a philosophy that there should be a separate execution platform that is tightly integrated into SharePoint, but sitting side by side. So to some extent, what's happening here with all the new Microsoft push for stuff not to execute on the server, but off server, is beautiful. We've been waiting for this for a long time. In particular, there was a couple of challenges we had to face with SharePoint 2010 and even earlier versions, because Microsoft just didn't give us anything to work with, and we had to improvise and we had to really get creative. Some of these challenges, which we're going to spend some more time on the next few slides, were authentication and impersonation. So it was difficult for us sometimes to impersonate users in doing certain stuff around the SharePoint environment. It sometimes meant that we had to go and install components on the SharePoint box. We had to operate under elevated permissions, complex security configurations. Those of you who've had K2 around SharePoint 2010 will know what I'm talking about. It worked, just wasn't easy. We've also had to deal with interacting with SharePoint from a remote client, which is our K2 server, through an API that really was fairly limited. I mean, as a client-side object model was introduced in SharePoint 2010 for remote clients to be able to talk to SharePoint, but it was really quite limited. So again, we had to go and build components and web services and DLLs and assemblies, and they had to be installed into central admin and on every web front end. And yes, we did it, but it wasn't easy. The next challenge we had was listening remotely to events being raised on SharePoint. So given that we sit on our own server potentially, how do we know if you check a new document into a document library? Again, we had to build event listeners that had to be deployed into the SharePoint farm with all the complexity surrounding that. And then lastly, and this is something that we actually haven't solved with traditional approaches, is to offer the same offering for on-premise offerings than we can for people with SharePoint in the cloud. So how do you actually get 100% consistency between what you can do on-prem versus what you can do online? And really, it's a perfect time for SharePoint 2013 to come to market because it's going to solve a lot of that for us, which we'll talk to in the next moment. So in summary, even though it was difficult, we've done these things in the last 10 years. By hook or by crook, we made it work. We do, however, think our customers should be focused on the end result and not be focused on building infrastructure and wiring different things together and getting into the details of back-end stuff that really isn't helping your business. You want to be focused on getting the food on the table. You don't want to be focused on the details. Right, so for 2013, a couple of quick things. We wanted to make it easy to install, easy to maintain, with a light touch on the SharePoint server. As Brian have explained, you can't even deploy managed code to the server anymore with a SharePoint app. So whatever you install on SharePoint, you have JavaScript and you have HTML, so lightweight. We still wanted to provide the power of sophisticated forms platform, a robust workflow engine, integration capabilities, and all the reporting capabilities we have. We don't want to lose that, but we want to make that touch light. And then lastly, we need to make this transportable between the on-prem and online offering 100%, if at all possible. And that's, we're confident we're getting there. Right. Couple of technologies that actually are enabling us to do this. Number one, the SharePoint app concept and architecture, as described by Brian. Number two, OAuth, which we'll talk to in more detail in a moment. An expansion in what's available on the client-side object models of CSOM, and many additional REST endpoints that you can consume. And then remote event receivers, which allows you to listen to events remotely without installing event listeners on the SharePoint box. So before we get into the details of all of that concepts, let's just show you what our app looks like. So let me switch to number two here. Are we on screen? Thank you. All right, so I'm also lugging around a heavy laptop. Hopefully at some point we can stop doing that. I've got a SharePoint 2013 server running here, and I'm going to install a K2 app from the local app catalog. What I'm going to show you is currently in beta. When it ships, it will become available in the SharePoint store, but for now I'm going to work with the app catalog. So if I go to my app catalog, you'll see I've deployed the K2 app to this catalog. And to install that and provision that into our site collection, I can go in here, I can choose to add an app. I'm going to add the K2 app. It will ask me, as a SharePoint user, do you trust K2 to do certain things on this environment? And this is an example of how OAuth is interacting here and making it easy for us to be able to work with SharePoint. I'm going to trust it just to move us forward. If I don't, we'll kind of get stuck and have to move back to slides. You don't want to do more PowerPoint, do you? All right, so now it's basically adding this app in. In a moment, it's going to allow me to quickly configure a couple of settings. In reality, the only thing that is deploying in here is a list, a button on a toolbar, and two app parts, which I'll show you in due time. So for a moment, I just want to go and configure the settings. So basically, the locally hosted SharePoint app component of our offering will now ask me a couple of questions, like, where is your K2 server, your provider-hosted app? Where is it? And that can be on-prem, can be online, can be anywhere, as long as we can get to it. Let me just get this up. Are we getting there? I think so. All right, needs permissions. There we go. All right, so where is it? You either have a K2 server or you don't. You can potentially spin one up with our cloud offering, which I can't talk to you about yet, but coming soon. Let's say you don't have a Katie server. How about we give you one? Right, the next thing that will happen here, you will notice up here, as Brian have explained, in the URL, let me just zoom in a bit, up there, that's SharePoint app running there. SharePoint hosted part of our app. Zoom out a bit. At the bottom here, if I actually hover my mouse over this button, look bottom left here, you'll actually see that's pointing to a URL running on the, let me just get it up on the Zoom here for you. That's it. That URL is running on the K2 server. So you really have a SharePoint hosted context here. We also have a provider hosted app operating at the same time in a seamless experience from an end user perspective. All right, so what it's just done, it's configured the OAuth resource. It's configured the claim setup between K2 and the SharePoint server here. It's issued us an OAuth token so that the K2 connector, the K2 service that allows us to talk to SharePoint, can actually talk to SharePoint. And on the next page, you can see some evidence of that, where we can now specify who can use what tools. And some of what's coming back here is actually coming back from SharePoint via CSOM or REST, depending on what we're doing. All right, so in a nutshell, app config, the one app part we're installing sits here. It is a task list, basically talking again to our K2 platform. So as an individual, what work do I have on my list this morning? I can also show you that if you go into any list or document library, there's a button on the toolbar here, which we will use extensively in the next 10 minutes or so. For a moment, let's just switch back to slides. I've seen death by PowerPoint before, so I'll try and get through the slides fairly quickly. Right, let's talk about OAuth for a moment. So this is me. You can see it's me because it's the beard. I may be a user of Twitter. Before I can use Twitter, I need to log into my Twitter account. I need to have keys or a username and a password to get in there. I may also have a LinkedIn account, for which I hopefully have a different username and password. Now, let's say I wanted to allow LinkedIn to tweet on my behalf. Clearly, I could give LinkedIn my Twitter username and password, which will work, but it will allow LinkedIn to tweet on my behalf. It will also allow LinkedIn to follow people on my behalf, delete content on my behalf, or even change my password, in which case we have a problem. So to solve that kind of dilemma, would it not be nice if I could give LinkedIn a note that tells Twitter that I'm going to allow LinkedIn to do certain things with certain limitations? And that is the basic concept of OAuth. So basically, if I can allow LinkedIn only to tweet on my behalf, there's no issues of all the unpredictable behavior and fears of giving your username and password to everybody around you. So in more specific terms, OAuth is an open, simple, and secure protocol that enables users to approve an application to act on their behalf. Not sure about the simple there, but compared to maybe Kerberos that Brian have mentioned, must be careful of that. We're going to get a thunderstruck here if you mention Kerberos too many times. Anyway, it is supposed to make life simpler. And if well implemented, it does actually make it simple. It allows users to allow apps access to their photos, their pictures, their documents, as specified by the end user. And these rights can only be granted by a user who actually has those kind of permissions. It's also important sometimes that you are able to revoke those permissions if you don't want to allow the app to act on your behalf anymore. And the key is you don't have to provide your credentials every time you want to interact with a certain application or an application wants to interact on your behalf. You're welcome, come in. Right, so who uses OAuth? I mean, certainly you don't want to be the only guys in town doing it. There's a long list up on the screen. This list came from the internet. You see a lot of well-known names up there. I don't think I need to go through all of them this afternoon, but let me tell you that it's mainstream. If you're not familiar with OAuth yet, I would suggest that you spend some time on that. So let's talk about OAuth versus claims-based authentication a bit. Who's implemented claims in an environment? Sounds like a couple of people had their hands into claims. It is easy to get confused between the two. To keep it short, OAuth is not a replacement for claims-based authentication. Applications like SharePoint and K2 will still need to use the claim which will identify who the user is, as well as the claim of what groups you may belong to and who you may be, to be able to determine who can do what within the local application server environment. But OAuth, on the other end, will allow an app to act on your behalf, which is quite different, but it does kind of build on the claims foundation, so you kind of need them both in the same environment, but it's not the same thing, and one is not replacing the other. I think that's the main concept there. Now, in the SharePoint environment, OAuth is critical to the new app model to work. In 2007 and 2010, apps ran inside the SharePoint box. Many of you have written the code to do that. We've done it. I'm sure you've done quite a bit of that. And a lot of it kind of was local. Impersonation was there. There was APIs to make that possible. It wasn't elegant, and certainly if you went off-server, it became quite complex. Now, in 2013, Microsoft wants you to run the app off-server. Don't want that managed code on the server at all. So OAuth really is the mainstream way to allow that external app access to certain things in SharePoint based on certain permissions granted by the user. Now, from a K2 point of view, K2 for SharePoint 2013 is fundamentally a SharePoint app. I'll show you that in more detail. It does allow K2 to integrate with SharePoint extensively without installing anything significantly on the SharePoint box, which solves our problem from offering the same offering on-premise versus online. And we'll show that to you in a moment. The K2 for SharePoint, as you can see on the picture, basically, the K2 server has a connector or a service broker that it uses to talk to the SharePoint box. That broker basically gets a token, an OAuth token, that allows it certain things in and around SharePoint, which keeps it simple and makes this possible. So how this all works, Brian spoke about permissions a little bit in the app manifest. If you went to some of the rest of his sessions this week, you would have seen some of that in more detail. But basically, in our app manifest going into SharePoint, we will ask SharePoint for certain permissions. When you provision this app, the end user would be notified that this app's going to need certain permissions, and you can yes or no. There's not really a lot of options there. You want it or you don't. Usually people just say okay, luckily. Now, there's a couple of different things that can happen. Many different permissions you could request. At the highest level, you can, on a site collection level, request permissions like read, write, manage, and full control. Important to note, and this is kind of a landmine a lot of people are busy stepping on, if you want to publish an app to the public app store, it cannot request full control at any scope level. So if you want to have an app that needs full control to do what you want it to do, you can probably get people to install it into their local application catalogs, but not in the public app store. It is our perception that there are things currently sitting in full control that should be in .manage. Microsoft is taking feedback, and I think it's something that will settle as we move along. It's new, and there's a lot of feedback coming in on it. Right, a quick couple of comments on app identity. Clearly, when an app does something on your behalf in SharePoint or in any app, you want to know, what did the app do? Which app did it? And if it was an app doing it on your behalf, on which user's behalf did it do that? So clearly, in SharePoint 2010 and before, you had this notion of, if you look at a list or a document library, it will say who's modified it or who's done something in that library. It's always been the user context, so it was always possible to see that it was Henny or Brian or Elaine or somebody doing it. Or if it was a service account doing it, it kind of gave you service accounts up there and was kind of ugly and not too descriptive. So now in 2013, an app can actually have an identity which is separate from user identities. And I've actually added more columns here so that you can see in the middle example, when an app is actually acting on behalf of a user, it will tell you what the app was and on behalf of which user it did what it did. And then lastly, there still is a concept here of an app-only permission. So when an app is acting as an app, you'll see that it was an app and which app it was. So just be aware of that, something to keep an eye on when you think about what you want to do there. So let's talk about CSOM and the rest. Clearly, as I said, for us to remotely interact with a SharePoint farm, It was kind of tricky because in the client-side object model in 2010, there wasn't a lot of functionality. And even on the REST endpoint side, there wasn't that much there. So it was firstly introduced in 2010. There's a WCF endpoint there, which many of you may have worked with, a client.svc. It was never directly accessible. Certainly, there's some proxy objects around that in the form of a Silverlight API, a JavaScript API, and a .NET managed code API. And our developers, even in our own team, tells me they still spend a lot of time on the .NET API because we have strongly typed objects, they have compile time checking, and they don't need to find out in the runtime that there's something wrong in their JavaScript. Brian reckons he's getting more keen on JavaScript.
Begrudgingly, very, very slowly.
Slowly but surely. I think JavaScript seems to be here to stay. A lot of people expected that to work differently, but seems to be here to stay. Anyway, there's a place for all of these things. It's good that there's flexibility. It's good that there's options and that there's depth in the model. Depending on what you want to do, choose the right object model and the right interface may serve you well. Right, so just a pictures guy. If you think about that client.svc, in 2010, .NET Silverlight and JavaScript gave you access to that service endpoint. In 2013, you now have REST access to that. So clearly, you can now use verbiage like get, put, and post to interact with SharePoint, which is nice. The REST interface is consumable from many different technologies, not only the traditional Microsoft things that we all may be used to. It opens up the market quite broadly to many different people. Brian even spoke about Cold Fusion, I think. the CSOM itself has been expanded, so it's now covering a whole lot of areas that was never available. So to get into the details on that, think about search, social, workflow, publishing, BCS, all of these things are now available via CSOM or REST. A couple of interesting things. Again, it's good to have choices. Our dev team tells me, for instance, that while they do most of what we do in the .NET API, for reasons as explained, when you upload a document, for instance, it sounds like the REST interface is performing better and it doesn't have the same limits on the size of documents you could upload. So again, think about what you want to do and keep your options open. It's there, and it's there to be used. Now, in reality, what we've done, if I can zoom in a bit, I think it will probably help you. There's so many laptops here, we need to keep our mind straight. Doesn't look like it's going to work on there, that's fine. So, what's on the screen there is our tooling to manage our connectors and our service brokers, which allows us to talk to things like SharePoint, SAP, Salesforce.com, CRM. And what you'll see if you can read up there, it basically breaks down everything on the SharePoint interface of your list, your libraries, your management functions. And it exposes all the methods and properties you can talk to. And ultimately, in our tooling, we made it easy then to talk to that interface. For instance, in our workflow designer, if you look at that upper top bar there, there's a whole lot of things you can do around lists and document libraries and sites and site collections. And as drag and drop, in the back end, we're talking to that CSOM interface or to the REST endpoints, depending on what we need to do. So it's good that it's there. We're trying to even add a couple of layers on top of that to make it quicker and easier to get stuff done. Last topic, and then we can demo, remote event receivers. So in SharePoint 2010, if you wanted to listen to events on the SharePoint box, you needed a local event listener. So it wasn't difficult to write, but essentially it was .NET assembly, and you had to tell SharePoint when you register that event, what method to call when that event is raised, and you needed to be on the box with its obvious challenges. So in the new model, you actually can use a declarative construct, and you can register an event receiver into the SharePoint box, because it's a declarative construct. It's not like you're deploying code in there. You're just letting it know there is a listener. That listener needs to be a web service. It needs to implement the iRemote event service interface. And what SharePoint will do when an event is raised in SharePoint, it will just let that web service know that an event has been raised. It will pass it an OAuth token so that you can know who raised that event and you can go and act on behalf of that user if you need to and do what you want to do. So again, it solved a major pain point for us, the fact that you have remote event receivers, because you can't go and deploy the code on the box that you used to. It's not that different from a development point of view, but conceptually makes a big, big difference. Right, so enough basics. Let's go and actually build a quick solution using K2 and SharePoint 2013, and then we can take some questions. So let's switch back to the demo box, which was number 2. Are we on screen? Good. All right, so where we stopped, we basically put our app into the SharePoint site collection, and we ran through its settings. So in my example today, I've got a travel expense approval example, fairly simple. Basically, you want to go on a trip. We want to know what's the description of it, where you're going, from start date to end date. And then for the approver, he's going to want to know, so what's the daily per diem, what's the estimated flight cost, what's the estimated hotel expenses involved here before he's going to want to approve it or not. Now, in simple terms, to build a workflow behind this, we need forms that you can fill out, we need approval forms, we need a workflow. And I do actually have an expense policy database, SQLDB, containing some guidelines on what hotels and flights may cost to different cities. So I'm going to integrate that into my example in a moment. So just to get this going, I'm going to go to my K2 app that was installed in the site collection. It will bring up a page which, again, feels like SharePoint. It's not SharePoint. That page is running on the K2 server, which can be anywhere. It allows me to integrate to SharePoint. It allows me to generate electronic forms. And it allows me to build workflows and reports. For now, we're just going to do the first few. And basically, we'll set up the workflow. So when you fill out the new form and press submit, it will kick off that workflow. It's just generating all those objects in the background. It does a lot of work for you. It's going to open up the workflow designer as a next step. Right, so now into the workflow designer. It's not a K2 workflow education session. We'll keep the workflow really simple. So I'll be brief in the workflow designer. I think 2.5 minutes in, we should have a workflow running. So to uniquely identify our workflow instances, I'm just going to use the trip description. On the right-hand side there, basically, if you look in here, you have all your SharePoint list columns, and you have easy drag-and-drop access to all those values to configure your workflow. Right, so I'm going to need one variable called PDF ID. We're going to play a little bit of PDF conversion of our form as part of our little app here, just to keep it interesting. Right, so we can start the workflow, and we need a manager approval step. And we want to allow this manager to approve it or decline it. That's going to take us through some options, which we don't need to spend time on. But we need to tell it who is this task going to be assigned to. In my case, to keep this simple, I'm going to just send it to the originator because I don't want to log in and out. You've seen a lot of workflow demos before. I'm also going to choose to notify the participant in a couple of different ways that there's a new task. So usually you would, on your app part in SharePoint, have a consolidated list of all your tasks. You can also get an email, or there's different channels you can configure. In this case, I'm going to want to send an email. I'm going to customize this email to also include a PDF snapshot of the form that was filled out, so that an offline user can sit on a flight and work through his inbox and do approvals and declines. And when he gets back online, just sync his inbox and off you go. So to configure that while we're in here, I'm just quickly going to do something. I'm not going to get into the details of what I'm doing in the interest of time. But basically, we do store snapshots in our smart object, which is our integration business entity layer. And I can get to it fairly easily with our tooling. We just feed it that ID, and we'll wire that up in the form when we get there. Okay, now because I'm talking and I'm working at the same time, I think I made my variable a string, and it should actually be an integer. I'm Sorry, but I'm not going to have to fix that because I've made that mistake before. That's okay. So let's quickly just wire that back up. This was manager approval. Approve and decline. Quickly assign it to ourselves again, and we'll be back on track. So there we are. Want to notify us that we have a work item. When we have a custom email message, it can contain HTML or different pieces of data, or I'm going to attach a PDF document to it, which I'm going to load in here. Now it should work. That's better. Right, then what do we do? If it's approved, there's many different things you can do. I'm going to work with SharePoint list items. Again, lots of different features up here that you could use to interact with SharePoint. Let's just update the list item. Now, it has context, so it knows by storing a reference which specific list item is involved in my particular workflow. I don't need to get too complicated to identify that. And I can easily go and update fields in the list by just typing them in there. Let's say we don't like the request, we'll just delete it, not to clog up our list of declined applications. So do you want it in the recycle bin? Yes or no? That's a cool new thing in SharePoint 2013. Off we go. Right, simple workflow. We could build complex workflows, but in the interest of your time, let's just get this up and running. Right, so now what we should have? We should have a form to start this workflow. It will start the workflow. It will take us to an approval step. At the approval step, there's another form which the manager could click on, and when we're done, we can update the list or we can delete the request. Right, so the workflow has been deployed to the K2 server, which can sit anywhere, ready to run. Let me exit the workflow designer back into SharePoint. Now, what you'll see on the screen is actually the list of objects that was generated on our behalf. Forms, smart objects, which is our integration components. It's basically for developers in the room. Methods and properties that you can pick from different interfaces, and it packages them up into a business-friendly object that you can talk to, like an employee or an invoice or a contract, and all our forms and workflow tooling can consume them. All right, so what we can do, if you actually now go to the list and you want to add a new item, you'll see that there's a form you can fill out. You could use the standard SharePoint list form. In this case, this form is not. It's a K2 smart form that was injected in here. What makes it different is not what it does now. It's because it's highly customizable, like what we're going to do next. Because right now I need to type all of these values in, but some of these values do actually exist in my expense policy database. So let's go and customize that form for a moment. So I go to my K2 tooling. Right, so into our K2 tooling, I'm going to take that little form, let's customize that a bit. We'll wire it into a couple of places in the next minute or two. So I'm going to take my new travel expense view. Views are reusable visual components. I'm going to edit that. So it opens up the K2 Forms Designer. It's browser-based and it's embedded in your SharePoint context, as you can see, but it really is running on the K2 server. This resolution is actually making it interesting. Let's make some spice here. All right, so what do we have? We've got the requester name, so who's actually logged onto the machine? Fairly easy for us to make that a little bit automatic. Let's add an expression to it. So I'm going to call this one current user. We do have some context that we can just inject in there. It will populate that box with a current user. Trip description will be different every time, so we can type that. The destination, so in our database, we actually have a list of places you can travel to, and I can easily access that SQL database through smart objects. So I'm going to change that control to be a drop-down. And because it's a drop-down, I can wire it to a different source. Always interesting when your resolution changes like this, huh? Right. It's my list of smart objects I can talk to. There's my policy database. And I'm basically going to populate the city into that box. Fairly easy. Start date and end date, we'll select manually. Now, the daily per diem, the flight cost, and the expense for lodging, sits in the expense database as well. So when we actually select a destination, we want to go and do a load from that expense database and populate those boxes just to get some automation into the system. So the way to do that is to actually go and add a rule. And we can say when a control on the view raises an event. When our drop-down list is being changed, do something. And what do we want to do? We want to go and call a smart object. So we know we can talk to the expense policy database. And we can go and do a load. So if you understand methods, properties, and events, you can wire the stuff up. And we will basically feed it the right ID. There's our ID. And it will go and load that for us. So we want to basically populate the flight cost, the lodging expense per day, and the per diem, and the city name, actually not there, here. There. Right, so now we've wired up the form to do several different things. While we're in here, let's just make sure we get a city into our list and not an ID. I just want to quickly configure this to give us something usable in our list. So here's my destination. And my drop down. And I don't want the name of the city. Right, so now we have a significantly more functional view, which is part of our form. Back into SharePoint, if I now want to add a new travel expense item, we'll have a different response here. So number one, it knows who's the currently logged on user. Two, I can type trip name. So let's say we came to Tech Ed. It reads names of cities I can travel to from a separate data source, which happened to be in SQL in this example. If I select a city, it tells me from that same database what all those different amounts could be, and I can tell it when I want to come to Tech Ed. Now, Tech Ed's not in Adelaide. It's probably also not in Brisbane, but close enough. And right now, it's just a new application. So not much of a form in terms of look and feel so far. We'll extend it a little bit in a moment, but you can see that there's tooling here for you to do quite a bit more. It's fairly easy and it's tightly integrated, enabled by all those things we've discussed in this new SharePoint model. Now, just to add to that, clearly, if I look at my K2 task list, we do actually have a new workflow that has been kicked off. If you look at it here, we can visually track where it's at. You can see where it's spending time because it's not a very interesting workflow. There's not much to see there. But let's go back to something more substantial. Let's keep editing that form. So what else can we do on that form to make it interesting? Let's just get a time check. We still have a bit of time, huh? Okay, good. So if I go back to my list, go to my K2 app, and we're going to open up the actual form, not only that little view. What's interesting how this VM does that. Let's just get it to go where we want it to go. Right. Almost like it's not following that link. Come on. Close this browser for a moment and just make sure it wants to let us go back in there. It also wants to go to the party, probably. There we are, okay. Right, so back into our app. Let's go and modify the form. So what we just modified was only a potentially a small part of a bigger form. We can put things on that form like reports and more data from different systems. So on my new expense form, I'm going to check it out so that nobody else edits that while I'm busy. It's going to open up my form container. Now I can actually go into reusable views. Like, for instance, I have a reporting example here where I can graphically display the breakdown of expenses. This resolution is making it a bit crush, but all right, so let's call that the breakdown of expenses. And let's make this view a little bit wider so that it looks a bit better in SharePoint. And when we select a new city, we want to query the values. We want to draw that graph on the side. So the way to do that, again, is to go to our event when we change the dropdown. And what we can do in there is to actually add an action to transfer a value. And how that control works, it's actually an example of a custom control that somebody has implemented. It's quite possible to build your own custom controls for this platform. So I can say where the city equals our selected city out of our menu structure here. So my drop-down list has a city value like that. So that will enable our graph to work. And while we're at it, let's add the capability to PDF snapshot this form. As we said, we want to mail a PDF snapshot to the approver. So the way to do that is basically to take a PDF control. This control was seriously coded by the CEO of K2 while he was on a plane to make sure the platform is extendable. He later handed that to the dev team and we've productized it, but it has an interesting history at least. Now, what happens when you click that save button, before you start the workflow, you actually want to snapshot what the end user filled out on the form. So when you click the save button, we basically want to go and call the PDF control, execute a control method. You can call controls as well with methods and properties that you can set, which is nice. I'm going to call the save PDF. I don't actually need to configure anything more on it. And then I need to tell the workflow which PDF to email to the end user. So that will just take us a moment and then we can run a better version of the solution. So we want to move calling the PDF before starting the workflow. And when we start the workflow, we want to tell it which PDF we've snapshotted so that we can send that to the end user. Right. Now, hopefully we have a nicely functional solution now. So again, let's go and go on a trip. So where are we going now? Student Partner Conference. That was in Cairns, but okay, let's say, is it ever in Canberra, Brian?
No.
Doesn't come to your town.
I really hope.
Let's go to Melbourne. All right, so let's say that's coming up sometime soon. And it has different values because it's Melbourne. It's an expensive place to go. And again, it's a new control. You'll see at the bottom when I selected a different city. So the resolution makes it render at the bottom, but it should actually be on the side here. It will go and read and it will populate that control when I select different cities. So I'm going to save that back in. Now, while that's happening, if I go to my task list, usually when I open it up, I get a form where I can approve or decline and have all my details. But as we said, we would really like to get a PDF snapshot mailed to our inbox so that we can also respond to this workflow while being offline. Let's just make sure that we do have another workflow started here. Here's our APC workflow. It is currently at manager approval. And if I go and log into the manager's inbox, our version of Contoso is the Nalix. And I'm logged in here as the admin. See if we have an email. Email sometimes takes a moment to arrive, but yeah, we're good. So now we have an email telling us there's a new approval to be done and there's a PDF attachment to it. I want to download that PDF. If you actually look at it in here, I'll do a quick job on it. There's our details that was filled out. There's a bit of our stats. The end user can actually sit in his email and basically reply to this by saying approved. The workflow system will pick that response up. And if we monitor our graphical, where's our view flow? We will actually see when that comes in. It will go to the approved side of that graph. It dynamically updates itself. And when that happens, we should see the update happening in the list as well. I'll leave that open because it might take a moment. I don't want to do more. I would like to hand back to Brian for us to summarize. But before I do that, let me summarize what I've just done here. So we installed a simple SharePoint hosted K2 app, which basically gives us a button on the menu bar. It gives us a list and two app parts. One of those app parts basically gives us like an iframe into the outside world, into the K2 server, where we can build forms, reports, workflows, and integration to our liking. And we've taken care of a lot of your OAuth and your claims-based issues. We've done the remote event receiver thing, and we've done an extensive job around exposing K2 functionality through CSOM and the REST, just to try and make this as tightly integrated as we can. But it's more elegant, it's more lightweight, it's more maintainable. So if you're a K2 customer today, I'm proud of what you have been able to achieve. I'm telling you, it should get easier, and I'm excited about it. You can see on this graph that it actually went to the top branch because we've approved it, and it should have updated our list with an approved status. Right, we can go to APC. That's my demo, Brian, back to you.
Projector?
Yep.
Cool, so just a quick wrap up for you guys, and we promise not to keep you too much longer so we can get to the party. We talked through a bit of a business case for why you'd want to use apps, some of the options for hosting, and then we go into the details of what K2 had done. So hopefully what we've been able to convey to you in this session is that apps can be as simple as something that's going to read from a list through to something as complicated as what the K2 guys have done and being able to build out full workflow and form systems and anything in between. And really the best message I can give to you guys here is as a takeaway and a bit of a call to action here is to say exactly what Coetzee said during the developer keynote, where he said, start building apps and developing that muscle, right? Get out there, just have a go at it. Start building things, deploying them, getting them into the app store, and just learning how to take in all this app stuff. The SDK is available for free, and as I mentioned, it's downloaded to the web platform installer, so go and grab a hold of that. Sign up for Office 365 and get yourself a developer site so you can start pushing your applications through to there and testing them yourself. But that's about it for us. So there's our contact details there for if any of you guys want to come and get in touch with us. Henny will be at the K2 booth, and I'll be around the office showcase floor tomorrow. So if you guys want to come and ask us more questions, or if you want to have a quick word with us after the session just now, we're more than happy to have a chat to you guys. Otherwise, we hope you've enjoyed the session, and hope you've had a really good tech ed. Tomorrow will be a great day to close out with, and we'll see you guys around. Thank you for listening.
So show me.